Fields. Anybody see that show? It's a dark, kind of noirish murder mystery in Louisiana. But the Matthew McConaughey character is always talking about how everything's a dream, and look at this person near death. Like, they're so relieved the dream is over. And, you know, I don't know. It seems like these philosophies are starting to, unless I'm seeing them more now, I don't know. Like buying a Volkswagen Rabbit and seeing a rabbit, seeing it everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Rabbit, I'm dating myself, but yeah.
It does appear that these themes are finding their way into popular culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no question about it.
But I guess maybe they've been there in some aspects of poetry, you know, artists and poets for a very long time.
How could they not?
Yeah, how could they not? So it's been there all along.
Yes.
Well, it just seemed like when you start to, like, not when you do anything, but when consciousness starts to experience itself differently, then it sees things differently. Like, things appear, you know what I mean? So all that comes with, in a way.
Right.
Because if you're not less seeing it as just you and a little person doing whatever, start seeing, you know, start stepping back from that, it starts speaking to you differently.
That,
speaking to itself differently.
That, curiously, has the same initials as Night Sky Sangha.
Oh, is that what you've been saying all along?
No.
3 years later?
But no, no shit, Sherlock.
Snap.
Yeah, it's funny how the observation that one thing, since it's only ever been one thing, is instantaneously self-fulfilling. Yeah.
What do you mean by instantaneously self-fulfilling?
Any impulse that appears in the space, the plasma of this dreaming, is also its own instantaneous fulfillment. Because it appeared.
Right.
If there's no externally existing objective reality or universe, if it is truly dreaming in situ, then anything that appears in the dream is also the spontaneity of its own self-fulfillment, quantum entangled with no lapse of time.
Yeah, well, because you're appearing at the same time with it.
Yeah, what's appearing in one's first-hand experience is the self-evident fact, for some, of dreaming in situ. Like, where does your mind go when it goes somewhere? How did it get there? What were the impulses that came together for you, any of us, to think a thing, to feel a thing, to decide to do a thing or not do a thing, to regret having done something, to regret having not done something, to create a fanciful imagination in response to a typically unpleasant conversation one might have with a parent. It's unbelievable. But sitting in the armchair at the end of the day, or playing Freecell, or whatever we're doing, we tend to reminisce about whatever happened prior to this moment as happening to me, more or less as the result of my choice, my decision, my will, my preference. And it seems like we pay absolutely no attention to the very, very loud fact that we are not in control of thought. We do not premeditate or self-select what we're going to think about next, or the way in which we think about it. or perhaps the emotive charge that it may or may not have, or what we do about the apparent consequence of the thought, the emotive charge, the impulse associated with that, and a commitment or not a commitment to keep thinking about it or be spun off into thinking about something else and forget that we even thought about the first thing in the first place.
It's kind of interesting if you just see this as being like addicted to stories, like just loves stories. It addicts to thoughts, it addicts to movies, to books, to TV. That's all it does all day long in some way.
Yes.
You just don't see anything else because it thinks thought and story is the most fascinating thing on the planet.
It's impression addiction.
Yeah. Like this rug could in no way be as fascinating as thought, which is not true. But it's bizarre. It's just funny. It's bizarre. I don't know.
It's nuts that we can be having a conversation in the English language and be articulating the poignancy of this kind of observation.
So that capacity to localize consciousness, memory, skill sets, and identification that's built around it is really quite interesting. Because can you say a banana does that? I don't know. Or those ants. I mean, like, get off my back, man. What are you guys crowding me in there for? Like, how did we all get here in this big pile? I don't know if you saw that big black spot on the...
Yes. Yeah. I saw it.
Being cool.
Yeah. But
anyhow, it's interesting to see that how could anyone claim that they're the orchestrator of such vast, interconnected maze of amazement. I'll say amazement.
Another poignant observation. You'd think the intenders meeting would just clear out. But it doesn't. No, everyone shows up to articulate their gratitudes as if gratitude is not a gift of grace. As if now, thanks to this jerk that started the whole thing, I've commoditized gratitude. Now I'm the owner of gratitude, the creator of gratitude, the vector author of gratitude. I'm going to experience gratitude, and then when we get together once a week to intend, I'm going to let you all know about my gratitudes. All of a sudden, the bliss of gratitude has become cheapened by ego.
It's Catholicism I don't know if Catholic, it's not the root, there's goes way back, whatever, but, you know, it's like prayer.
Then after we do a fierce round of gratitude expressiveness, and everyone knows just how fucking grateful you are, now you can start intending. Because you've loosened up, you've given consciousness you've given consciousness a, what are those little suppositories? Glycerin suppository. You've given consciousness a glycerin suppository by virtue of your bold expression of your fucking gratitudes. Now you have the right to place your demands on consciousness, masquerading as intentions for the betterment of all. You fucking poser. That's the intenders group.
Back to the Catholic Church and pray.
It's the same. It's the same.
Yeah. I mean, I really get tired of hearing myself week after week.
Thank God.
If I'm tired of hearing myself, I'm sure these other guys. Oh. So I said, here's my final intention. I intend to use my Wednesdays to actually take action in some direction and not talk about it.
Really? Yeah, I can imagine the looks on their faces when everyone shows up at the intenders meeting and someone says, fuck, we're out of glycerin. You know, then there's a scramble to the CVS.
I mean, what harm does it do except it strengthens the dream, I guess. And the false idea that we're the locus of control. We've got a handle on it.
That's a lot of
harm. We've got a steering wheel. you know, with the valve that turns on and off the hose.
There's no harm or benefit.
Yeah, right.
It's just another puppy sticking his head out the window, you know, going, right? Imagining that there is a God other than oneself who can be loosened. You know, let's say you go to a bar and you happen to just, right, inch up next to God. Well, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to try to ply him or her with drinks, right? Then the next thing you're going to...
Get drunk and then ask for money.
Yeah, then the next thing you're going to do, if you don't feel like fucking God...
That doesn't work.
Or being fucked by God,
yeah.
You'll ask for favors. Yeah, you'll ask for a bunch of favors. Yeah. So in tenders is the same thing. Let's ply God with a bunch of drinks and then ask for favors because she's inebriated and out of her mind. That's how stupid it is.
Maybe there should be in Tenders Anonymous now.
It's coming.
It's coming.
But, I mean, you know, it's a cheap shot, but you know I'm good at that, to point this finger at intenders. I mean, it's all of us, right? It's the radiant nature of consciousness on the other end of the fire hose, imagining that it is actually occupies an independently existing subjective nature that's at risk. So... yeah, why not turn gratitudes, which are otherwise bliss, into a product of ego, into a commodity of ego, and then supplicate?
So the evangelist who gets caught having sex in a bathroom and says,
"Yeah,
the devil was working through me,"
yeah,
is right.
Sure. Yeah.
That's really just testosterone, but whatever.
Yeah.
Call it.
So many words. The devil made him do it. He has no agency.
Yeah. Why do you think they call it a glory hole?
That's right. There you go. You can see the Dharma in that now. That's even...
We've gone too far. I think we've gone too far.
This might be
the hole I was thinking of earlier was a drain plug hole larger than my cottage.
Yeah, right.
If I could undo it, it just
hole.
Everything falls in and I've got all this space.
Yeah, you've got total space. That's right.
One shot deal.
Yeah. Well done. This will yield that this conversation even occurs is evidence enough that this miracle will yield to your looking, to your curiosity, to your interest. Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible to be speaking on such intimate terms about the curious nature of the immediacy of radiant experience. It yields. It reveals itself. It's happy to do so. Why that gesture of affection may appear to be rare on what we call Earth is, I don't know what to say about that.
Alien wars.
Yeah, who knows? Right? Right. Why isn't the entire global population dropping its weapons, dropping its harsh words, and chilling the fuck out, and still, you could say, have its technological prowess intact, but committed to, what would you call it? Sustainability? Yes? Education?
That's right.
Joy? Music? Dance?
How do you quell that, I want more of that, whatever I want more of that is?
Why are we on fire with fear, spite, and violence?
That's a good question.
And you could say that even though it may appear, if one reads the papers or watches the Huffington Post or whatever it is that we do, it may appear as if the whole world is on flames. But what we're seeing is a concentration of deliberate excitabilities to make it look like there's chaos everywhere, when on a percentage basis, all the theaters where chaos is actively occurring is a fraction of the otherwise somewhat cooperative behaviors of other humans elsewhere.
Yeah, the action news theme music doesn't really go with that stuff.
Action news. Nothing happened today, and if it did, we don't really care much about it. Right? Another episode of Seinfeld. That was the news. That took about 5 seconds. Here's something from our sponsors, and back to I Love Lucy. Da 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 da.
I like when Dan Aykroyd did
next
the news.
Next, the giant puppy will move the screen for a half an hour.
Yeah.
The puppy bowl. Did you ever see the puppy bowl? Like, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the little
puppies were around. Yeah, like during the Super Bowl, they just had the puppies kind of
just running around.
That's
cute.
My idea of entertainment.
Well, that you bring up a lot about the subject at risk. What did you say that?
Yes.
I mean, it is driving this thing, like, you know, people afraid of this Ebola bullshit. I mean,
yeah,
it's like one thing or the other, and then them so proud and teary, I'm getting out, I'm fine. It's like, what is this? I'd rather watch I Love Lucy. It's fucking irritating to me.
Okay, there you go.
So anyhow.
Yeah.
I just don't think in terms of I could catch something.
Ah.
I've already caught life, and I'll catch life until it changes.
Yeah.
In whatever form it changes.
That's right, until it drops you in the large Soylent Green machine.
No, I find you in bad taste.
Yeah, really. Most likely your cadaver would be like pushed off the conveyor belt.
That's right.
Into the power bar machine. Yeah, no, not this one.
Oh, dear. Reject it.
Feed that one to the animals.
So is that fed by
then you end up in Detroit.
Would that be a primal function of the self-preservation? Because there is a strong sense of self and preservation, but I don't know if instinct, like with animals, if they have a true like self like we do. I mean,
we don't have one.
Neurotic. I mean, I guess animals can be neurotic.
They take Prozac now.
They do. Oh.
Yes. Dogs.
Are they in therapy too? Do they sit with their therapist?
Well, there are animal whisperers that make a good living.
My dog gets 2 pills and some peanut butter every morning.
Oh, shit.
Who does?
Really? My mom's dog.
Oh, really?
Oh my God!
Well,
I'm way behind.
There's a certain theme that you're suggesting, which is: do creatures other than humans possess neurosis?
Yeah, in a sense, because I sometimes automatically think we're the great arbiters of this hyper-neuroticism.
Yeah.
Of course I made this great thing happen. Oh, no, right. They made that.
We might have a lock on hyper-neuroticism.
I think we have the lock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
Shit.
I mean, they might get a little OCD every now and then.
Yeah, but it can't compare to where my mind can go.
That's right. Oh,
when it comes to creating hell on Earth.
They're after me.
Yeah. Right.
And the other side of it is to really see through that, in a sense, or to get insight into this phenomena. It's not like trying to stop it or start it or getting better at it.
Those sound good, and I wouldn't dismiss them out of hand.
It implies some.
Well, it's up to you whether you're facing the fire hose head on, trying to get to the nozzle, or whether there's another right.
Well, I'm looking at the whole dance actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I do have that made-up drama. Yeah, it'd be nice if I got a weekly paycheck. I could just have fun, and I wouldn't have to think about that. Those damn bills, and if I don't feel like working that week.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting out of that self-preservation or self-person at risk.
Yeah.
I'm dissolving, or I'm not able to sustain this.
Yes.
In a wholesome way, a fruitful way. In a
wholesome, fruitful, preferred, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I mean, even though, again, I'm just, I guess I'm tapping at that, seeing what the fear side would say.
Sure.
You know, even though it's not really prominent. It's just like, oh, shit, yeah. You again.
It's dreaming. It's all dreaming. And if there is firm or fast association with what is appearing in mind as a creative force of what's not happening, then there can be all kinds of emotional and biological responses. Some could be fear and paralysis and panic and depression, you know, beyond the pale. And the what we call mind, or this capacity to imagine, can also create, right? Kick-ass bliss. Orgiastic expansivity.
Well, how about when two dreams bounce?
Sign me up.
When's that workshop starting?
Oh, there you go.
How much does it cost?
When two dreams bounce off of each other, one of them is I hate you energy, and the other one is I have a better dream, and hate all you like, I see you as a brother. And not with words, but energetically.
Well, at some point, these, let's say, navigations.
But it's without thought, I mean. It's,
yeah.
I'm being clever right now. Just
right.
Making mistakes.
Well, that's the point. You have already, let's say, self-transcended even your best, right, clever.
One up.
Yeah. So, therefore, these, you know, kinds of internal
bullshit.
Yeah, right. You're already better than the layers of bullshit that you throw at yourself.
I'm sure you'll get something out of it.
Yeah, right.
You'll get something out of anything.
Yeah.
Squash. Pumpkin. I mean, getting together is suggestive of something.
Yeah, sure.
You know, contrasting being caught up in the dream versus noticing something. Having a cappuccino in the late afternoon to ease a pain in the head is something. I could say, why do you do this? Why do we do this?
We don't. It's doing it.
Why does it do it? That's still a question.
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah.
Really don't know.
It comes to find out itself isn't really a self.
Well, it's not really. Nothing's happening. Nothing has ever occurred.
Right, so the dream has a desire to visit itself, to realize that it's not a dream. Or to not care if it realizes it's a dream or not.
Too much anthropomorphization.
Right, but that's even a function of the dreamer having a dream in the dream.
That's then, right.
You know.
Yes. The dreaming is infinitely regressive or infinitely iterative. Nothing escapes dreaming. So consequence, author, reason, justification are all myth.
But the orgasmic presence doesn't even seem to have an identity or a self at that instant.
No. Well, at that instant, how about never? Or always. You know what I mean? What do we mean by an identification or a this or a that or consciousness or... Right? I mean, once you articulate Or let's say you use the word presence, as we've heard before, right? To suggest, what would you say, the foundation of the irrefutable nature of dreaming? So what? Right? But you can use that suggestibility of presence as immutable or inviolable, upon which, in which, all permutation occurs and appears. But that doesn't make presence, or what you're referring to as presence, a thing. Or that it is subject to relativity. Or subject to quantum mechanics. Or subject to string theory. Or subject to Big Bang. Or subject to even the multiverse observation. This is what, you know, even the most, let's say, progressive physicists have a hard time articulating. Not just them, but anyone. This is just dreaming itself into whatever. And there is no author, there is no building block, there is no before, there is no consequence, there is no mean. This isn't about anything. It's the true flatliner. So how would someone who's lettered, as in PhD'd, that has dedicated his or her life to exotic mathematics or exotic theory, or being on the receiving end of profound telescopes and data interpretation, all they can do is shrug. Wow. This is fucking dreaming, dude.
Yeah, that doesn't work so well. You gotta take yourself seriously and put a picture of yourself up and then write some spiel about you and how...
It's not about anything. It didn't actually begin. It's not even happening now. We don't know if it'll end because it didn't begin and it's not happening now, so I can't really give you a definitive hunch on whether it will end. End is just off the charts. It's not even relevant anymore.
Yeah, I came up with an odyssey like that many years ago. Before the beginning and after the end.
Before the beginning and after the end
is
what
we... There is love. There is this.
Oh,
there
well,
is whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
I was in love at the time, so...
When you're in love, before the beginning and after the end...
There is love.
There is love. Is clear as day, isn't it? It's clear as day. Yeah. I'm not going to no intenders group when I got that humming along. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But that, you know, I guess in a way I'm still in love with this mystery kind of a thing, because that's sort of what it was then, too, in a way. It was kind of an all-openness, and it happens every day at some degree. Not just on the toilet either.
Oh, good spot for it, but it's good to know that it happens elsewhere. Yeah.
Every time you're talking about shit, you know, it's like, well, you gotta let go, you know, at some point. You're gonna be full of it. How can I let go of my most prized possession, whatever that is, you know? Or my most cherished whatever, even if it's a thought or a perception or a memory or some clever take on this.
Once this confidence that we have in individuated subjective nature starts to loosen up, break up, then all of these associations which we are masters at, there's no interest. So not only is there, you could say, the maturing or refinement of the profundity of present experience, but interest and attention also shift profoundly from micromanaging the mirage of you, you could say, into absolutely unfettered territory, which is always incredibly fresh and novel and different than what you had alluded to earlier, which was that, let's just say it, a quality of boredom that I'm no longer in desire of anything, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that happens too, of mm-hmm. course. But we're looking at, you can't even call it wonder because it's too late. You can't even call it bliss because that's just too, right, conditional.
Distinct from suffering or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, or I mean, it's like catching a glimpse of a reflection in a mirror. It's just, you know, seeing something in a different light than, you know, looks cool. That's it.
Yeah.
Call that bliss? I don't fucking know. I can feel like shit and still the light can catch my eye right. and I can see it and it could be amazing and cool. And
yes.
I could still feel horrible physically, mentally, and still appreciate that and experience it and enjoy it.
All this is, let's say, omnivorous, right? It's an opportunivore. So everything that's appearing in present experience is just, right, the lusciousness of opportunity occurring at, you could say, concurrent dimensions, as in multiverses, of subtlety that is immeasurable, inarticulatable, or something like that. Yeah. And that's, as in right now, profoundly dynamic, profoundly novel, profoundly immersive. And it may, and it could actually very well be, let's just say, you know, transcendent of want.
Yeah, it's like my pants feel really good. Sometimes it's funny, I'm like, am I like naturally on ecstasy now?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like shit the other day. I'm walking on the street, I'm like, my flip-flops feel really good on my feet. Like, I wasn't even in good mood. But I was still like, they're really squishy.
when interest and attention, which is a metaphor for awareness, relaxes from the prison of thought into presence as sensation and observation, it's very happy.
Well, sometimes it's annoying. Sometimes your clothes are, you know, bugs are, you know, whatever, but it's, yeah, it's kind of still, it's a very different experience.
Well, the yoga of radiant presence, the way that it's, let's say, you know, taught and elucidated, a primary aspect of that is to startle one into seeing that experience as raw data is off the charts and has nothing to do with the stories told about what we think it is that we're experiencing. That so-called light is stimulating the retina doesn't make whatever that is over there a fan.
Yeah.
You know? That
of which you should evaluate. I wonder if that's a good fan. Do you think we should get another fan? How much should that fan cost? Do you think we got a good deal on that?
Exactly.
What right. do you think that fan says about me?
This is a lot.
What we do. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
How do I look next to the fan?
Should we take a selfie next to the fan? Everybody, selfie next to the fan.
Or sing on the other side of the fan, right? And record it.
That's right. Or jump into a bathtub with the fan.
Sounds very Godfather.
Yeah. Let's follow Robin Williams. And then someone will post it on Facebook.
Oh, shit. Endless possibility.
The fan is not quite as squishy as my sandals, but hmm.
What happens if I stick my finger in it?
So an emphasis placed on the radiant nature of present experience can attract our interest and attention away from the abstract virtual world we've created by virtue of naming objects or naming experience into the observable present, felt presence of wonder. That this is happening at all is a hallelujah. We tend to associate happiness or security or satisfaction with a destination, with something acquired, whether an object or a feeling, which freezes it. What if happiness, peace, truly arising liberation was not a destination, was not conditional upon a feeling, a state, or an object, or a circumstance, or event being acquired, which suits your preferences? When we look at popular culture and the misery of consumerist pressure, we're seeing happiness is associated with the acquiring of goods or services.
It doesn't work. We've been told that a million times.
Nothing
over.
Works.
But we still.
We don't often see, or if at all, anything within the popular culture, even the so-called now spiritualized, curious, right, popular culture, that happy is not conditional, not dependent, that this is not about anything. And the recognition that this is not about anything, as it roots or roosts in you, is happiness, is liberation. Liberation from all conditions.
I was just thinking of the word unconditional, going from the habituation of conditions that depend on my happiness or my peace or my whatever,
right,
to there are no conditions.
How do we become so angry with the person that we love? Well, they're just not fitting into my happiness quotient in the moment. I used to, let's say when I fell in love with them before the beginning and after the end, you know, they were, you could say, the source supreme of my transcendent experience.
She was a little disappointed. I didn't give her it. I put it on my wall.
Yeah.
And she said, why don't you give that to me? I said, okay. It was actually the great, you know, the greatness. That's why I'm not in relationships. Generally.
Well, it's one reason.
Generally, yes. Oh, yeah. There I am. Yeah, clever again.
But you see how short-tempered we become with objects, subjects, persons, things we own. How short-tempered we become when they stop fulfilling my insatiable lust for conditional happiness. Mm-hmm. Somehow, if one is interested in yogic discovery, the geometry of conditional happiness that has to come up on your dashboard, you have to deal with the frustrations, the disappointments and dissatisfactions of living conditionally, dependent upon. And desirelessness is not the result or consequence of a vow or willful endeavor. It won't work anyway. Desirelessness is a synonym for revelation. Freedom from all conditions and circumstances. From want. And all of that is symptomatic of the release spontaneously present of identification with subjective nature. The root dilemma, the root joke, the root myth is identification with subjective nature as individuatedly appearing, temporally appearing.
Yeah, you can never experience this unencumbered in that state. I don't think so. I don't know. But I don't see how you could.
How you could
experience this unencumbered in that state, in the subjective. Because it's always about you and your relationship to everything else.
Exactly. That's the myth. That's the Leela.
That's not unencumbered. I don't know how you would.
You can't.
You'd have to be pretty talented. I don't know. Maybe somebody could do that.
Your life is punctuated by moments of the release of conditions. After the fact, we refer to that as joy, as a spiritual experience, as a emancipation. When one actually has an appointment or keeps an appointment with liberation, unsullied dreaming.
But that can happen even in a sullied dream. See, that's what's really kind of odd. Without time at all. Look, I'm in this process and I'm incredibly neurotic and really attached to an outcome. And then all of a sudden I'm aware of the Leela or the dance of this whole nonsense. And it's still happening.
Oh, yes.
Yet I'm not as sticky to it.
That's right.
Sense. And who is this I? I don't even know. It doesn't matter.
Circumstances
anymore.
And events, whether going your way or not going your way, need not abate for you to be free, to get a glimpse of absolute unconditional nature. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's... You see, when we try to manipulate or influence circumstances and events so that we can return to peace or we can return to freedom or we can return to something of a preferred stasis, it doesn't work. This is already way ahead of you. Way ahead. As an immediacy, it's way ahead of you. Even though there's no time.
Yeah, but if you're not like a subjective being, then it's not really an issue. It's like, okay, I'm neurotic or not.
No issue. No issue.
What does that have to do with anything?
Yes. This is curious because when we're in this context using the word freedom is A, not freedom from something, and not freedom, you know, enjoyed even by you. So that means that all of our neurotic crescendo goes on unabated, but there's no affliction. A Buddhist might say, oh, revelation of emptiness. Right? That nirvana should look like a accomplished pundit or moral person is bullshit.
That's the fascinating thing about funny thing. We all have these idealized, fantasticized ideas about what it would look like. We wouldn't even know. Sat down right next to us, we would have no fucking idea.
And it certainly wouldn't end up being ideal.
It wouldn't look anything like... I mean, it's just bizarre, you know, made up insanity. It's total insanity.
This yields... You can, one can, this can peer into itself, into its own curious holofractal nature. And so what we call the primate can be released from conditional identification. And that, whatever that is, will do what it does with the likes of you. Maybe for now it looks like coming to this room to have these conversations.
This is to a children's room to talk about ingredients.
Things I've noticed in conversation when people happen to be digging, you know, into self in one way. I've never been this way before. It's really it's upsetting me. Da da da. You know, I don't know how this works. I don't have this function. I said, do you see what you're leaning on there? You've made something up about how you were, and you're holding on to that. And comparing it to this.
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah. Because I'm like, where'd that come from? Because I've been doing that all my life, too, in one sense. Like, boy, why didn't I make a left instead of a right? God, I could be here instead of there. And if only this, then that. It's like, what the fuck? And it's just so easy to see it anymore. And it's just really interesting. I mean, there's just no question. There's no belly aching. There's no problem solving.
Yep.
That's what's really kind of cool. Someone goes, I've got a problem. I'm not who I used to be.
Whoa. Really?
As you would say, man, if I got shit going on, I said, congratulations and welcome to presence. Not that, you know, it's always this or that. But
you know,
if it's compared to the moment before, the year, the decade, or I as young man, or
comparison,
as one, or
comparison, like, and measure are suffering.
Yeah, yes, that's what I was connecting it to. This person, oh, and I go, yeah. So you really think you know? You don't know shit. I don't say that because I'm a little more polite. But I'm learning.
Good.
If they don't take it personally, I might get to that point.
Well, that's a friend.
Yes.
Everyone else can fuck off.
He's obviously made leaps and bounds if he goes out with me in public.
Wow. Yeah, that's true.
I don't mind that at all.
Really?
I give people the finger in traffic and stuff.
Yeah.
In the middle of the street in Doylestown.
Cool.
Start acting all crazy.
Can't hear it? Want me to turn the volume up? Stereo.
In a lucid dream, let's suggest you are happy with whatever happens next. You're thrilled to the boots with whatever appears next in a lucid dream. Why do we get so agitated here? Isn't this truly a lucid dream that we have no control over? That every blurp that happens in mind, the use of our opposable thumb, that we can bathe or make a dollar or spend a dollar or not, is why aren't we thrilled? If I go left, if I go right, if I fall in love, if I lost her, Why aren't we thrilled to the teeth with whatever appears to appear? What's at stake here in what we call waking consciousness that's not at risk or at stake in a lucid dream? If this is not about anything, impersonally appearing, without any duration, no steering wheel, no beginning, no end, no middle. It is a living, lucid dream. On tap, in your face. Instantly self-fulfilling.
Yeah, it's in sleep.
I would suggest the revelation into this hint, this suggestion, has nothing to do with what we typically refer to as peace or freedom. Those are conditional. This is not.
And someone did ask me once, wouldn't you rather prefer peace and harmony? I said, no, sometimes I like to stir shit up. To be honest, I really do. Huh? I really do. I like to stir shit up.
Find me someone that lives in peace and harmony, and I will show you a poser. Peace and harmony are bullshit.
If you invest in it as a perpetual
as long state, as it's conditional,
yeah.
It's bullshit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the great carnivorous nature of the cosmos in peace and harmony? Well, sure it is, because there's no one suffering when universes, when galaxies, when clusters collide. So it's just fireworks, right? The great sucking sound of black holes eating everything in sight for miles around. Fuck it, light years around. Is that peace and harmony? No. From the point of view of, let's say, molecular constituency, it's quite violent, isn't it? The great birth of stars is one hell of a gestation period.
Ooh, that's going to be my new nonprofit. Stop black holes.
Stop black holes now.
Black holes must be peaceful.
That's right.
You can have the ice challenge with that.
Why can't you see the light?
Yeah.
Why do you eat my light?
Right.
You must see.
Why do you eat my light? Exactly.
Just make it a multi-million.
Right.
Multi-marketing scam.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Really. God, you're so hungry. You eat light.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Look at the insatiability, right, of what we convey as the right cosmic dance.
Idealized.
The universal multi-galactic cosmic dance is off the charts. Mm. But we don't look out into the sky and go, poor bastards. You know, let's go into the center of Doylestown and, you know, say something like, what would you say? Peace, not war? I mean, what would you say? Stasis, not universal chaos?
Every Tuesday evening, the Quakers would be on each corner.
Yeah.
They stopped doing that thing,
mm-hmm.
as far as I know.
They were killing mosquitoes, stepping on bugs, and then protesting for peace.
And ostracizing fruit bats.
Not a good idea.
really. I mean, they show him that ugly face. He didn't carry your of what do you call it?
Fruit bats carry stuff.
They
rabies.
Carry, no, they carry the Ebola.
Oh, fruit bats are carriers of Ebola. Yeah.
So it's like accused.
Mm-hmm.
Never met a fruit bat I didn't like.
Right. Nuke a fruit bat for Jesus or something like that?
But save the fruit bats is not like save the seals. It's just not going to work.
Let's just make sure it's
the same. That's what I'm doing.
The glaciers are melting. We don't breathe well underwater.
And I just got rid of all my scuba gear.
Yeah, and you idiot, you just sold your scuba gear. God, timing.
Let's see, can I hold my breath for 70 years? Sure.
Uh-huh.
I have a lot of straws.
You know, I think in one sense, I don't know if ignorance was brought up as a subject before, but...
Why not?
But again, it reminded me of what I just could not digest. And my mother would say, don't think so much. Ignorance is bliss. I thought, what?
But ouch.
If you go a little further, you know, into the inquiry of it all, that insatiable desire for knowledge in order to get into some more secure presence, that certain knowingness, do no harm, I don't know, just aware and conscious without suffering, is an endless chase. It's again, running into the fire hose. It's blowing you away. So in an odd sense, ignorance and bliss is actually a pill, an antidote to this insatiable desire for knowledge that will free me from whatever. You know, this presence that hurts, that's where suffering seems to perpetuate, or where I say something stupid or do something stupid or don't do something that should have been done. Whatever. You know, you see that it's got a full spectrum dissatisfaction to it.
As this yields to you, you simply rest in it. And there's... you could say less of an interest in hypotheticalizing.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. This reminded me, one of my reliefs is imagining the hands of God and me being that big. Yeah, and resting.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we're successful at conjuring the hint of absolute delight with a lucid dream, the thrill of having no resistance whatsoever to whatever it is that's appearing or not appearing, no danger, no risk, no consequence, just pure thrill, pure novelty, unabated, immeasurable. Get a little hint of it. Get a little taste of it. Even if it's imagined is okay, because there's nothing here that's not imagined. So even imagine the thrill, the relaxation, the complete unencumbrance of any consequence or causal chain. That's your nature. That's what this actually is. So that, you know, knock and it shall be opened unto you. This yields.
It's bizarre, though, in a way you have to convince yourself. It's like an elusive dream where you're like, I don't know, am I dreaming or am I awake? You're not sure. If you're not sure, it's way different than if you're like, nope, definitely dreaming.
Yep.
You know, you're a little more bold if you're like, definitely dreaming.
Yeah.
If you're like, well, I don't know. It's like totally different.
So the yogi that has become, let's say, deeply intimate with what we're speaking about can certainly, you could say, discern what symptoms there are that differentiate waking state, sleep as in dreaming, or dreamless sleep, and yet doesn't really perceive any difference between the three. So the what we'll call the locus of identification for the primate is with the psychiatric and the corporeal and circumstances and events as the consequence of, right, birth, right, individuated subjective and individuated objective nature. The yogi of this quality of, right, intimacy is not so informed.
So the third phrase of Lao Tzu that he didn't bother to say is, am I dreaming, period. Not which one is real, in a sense.
This is dreaming in situ, right here, right now. This is it. This is the Godhead. This is the entirety. You are not in a place at the expense of some other place. You're not in a time where there was something before or something hence. This moment is the entirety of all. Lucidly dreaming. And you can take your hands off the steering wheel. That's the gift. That's why there is so-called enlightenment and then those in hot pursuit of it. It's the fulfillment of an already prescient instinct and intuition that each of us has for absolute unconditioned being. And that instinct and intuition for unencumbered being comes from where? This. Now. So how distant are you from the fulfillment of what this already is?
It's always immediate then. Always immediate without delay. Unless we pretend that it takes a long, hard life and road with many turns and challenges and so forth and so on.
The present immediacy of unencumbered being is all this is. Curiously, don't ask me why, it can imagine otherwise. This can fool itself into being other than itself, and therefore at risk. Which is the same metaphor as the root identification with the imagination of a disparate subjective nature.
It wants to play different characters and narrate and MC. It's and sometimes it wants to be in the
fucking
story.
Dress up.
Sometimes it wants to be outside the story.
You know, it's a lot like our dear Pebble
it's
Hill.
Like, I'll be a narrator.
It's dress up. It's theater. Acting, Baudelaire.
Yeah.
Fantastic, thank you.
I remember someone came to meditation dressed as a woman, and when we opened our eyes, he was himself again, back to a man. I don't know where that came from, but the ever-changing present.
Acting. Thank you.
See, Shakespeare, all the world's a stage, right?
Yes.
It's dress up.
Ah, that's another fun.
That's why I took that acting class in college.
That's another fun thing. When we think we have a handle on who a person is. Oh, I know what makes them tick. And da-da-da-da-da. I said, well, you are a scriptwriter. You just created a character. What would you like them to do next? And I realized that's all I've ever done. If I've ever have a handle on who anyone in my world is, don't take me literally, because I know all you'll know is what I'm making up. You know? it's kind of liberating in a sense to be aware that it's not as solid, where before it might have been quite unsettling to be aware that it's not so, as solid as you thought it was. My perception, my understanding, my insight. To not need that.
Liberation is the release of all locus. No point. No position.
And I guess a long time ago they mispronounced it and they said all locusts.
All locusts must leave. Or we'll plague your silly ass.
Sorry.
Let my locust go. No, let my...
I know, pun attack. Pun attack, sorry. Yeah, identification. It's just...
Our observation, then, is to see this presence, this moment, this irrefutability is without measure, is without frame of reference, is not about anything. It's not a conveyance. It's isness, right? Having a conversation like this, you could say, is a way to get used to the fact that you are the Absolute. We kick it around conversationally, feeling it, creating hypotheticals and circumstances and what-ifs to play around with the texture that appears in your present experience as this yields to you, as it yields to itself. So this is a safe place, right? Where you, any of us, can feel liberation as presently so, not as a, right? Not as a deliverable, but as presently so. Get used to it. It's a different kind of metaphor than going up the mountain to see a great personage in hopes of getting liberation from them, right? As a cathartic event.
Same exact thing as if I had more money, I'd be happier.
Yes.
Or whatever, you know, if I had a girlfriend, I'd be happier. If I had this,
yes,
I'd be happier. It's a circular...
That's the beggar, right?
Sounds very godlike out there.
Is that an omen for the beggar?
You can hear some, you know, teachers talk about you're already enlightened.
Yes, Pema Chodron and all those people.
I don't find it all that useful, personally. I'd rather frame it or characterize it as this is awake.
That distinction is interesting because the one, it's centered around self.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the other doesn't, the self can come, the self can go. The self can be stuck as shit or it can be as high as a freaking kite.
Yep.
Yet this is, this immediacy is.
This is awake.
Is the shit always.
Yes.
I mean, like really.
And rather than, let's say, encouraging someone through the languaging of being already enlightened, I would rather be invited into or invite others into, mm-hmm. it's the same, this is awake. Deal with it. Get used to it. Reflect upon, immerse in, enjoy the profundity of your first hand experience as awake. It takes the edge off of this hungering pursuit of or despair that a certain cathartic event hasn't yet occurred to me. Even though my dear Pema tells me, and I believe her, that I'm already enlightened.
Exactly. See, it's very condescending, right?
Yeah. In a sense, it's very condescending. Yes.
Even though, in one sense, it would appear to be affirming. It's really affirming of the dreamer, in a sense.
Well, it used to frustrate me to hear things like that.
For good reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We mistake this word enlightenment as a condition, as a takeaway, as the consequence of a cathartic event. Well, it's not. And that kind of enlightenment is bullshit. Pema can keep it. She can wash the floors with it, for all I care.
I'm laughing because I was with a friend today, and I was talking about the group and how everybody kind of gets dissed. And she says, mention Pema Chodron. See what he said.
We'll take
You're
her.
Like, I can already tell you what he's
even have
say.
To. Right?
We'll take her right out. Poser.
Put her in the toilet and flush it.
She's a poser with a short haircut.
Yeah, but here's where
it's horrible.
Little boy.
Here's where I take a more gentle tack, I think, on the.
Yeah, you're gentle. Mr. Gentle over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, it's still revolutionary, but at the same time, in that seeking cycle, that discovery cycle, that sense of self that went from crappy shit to the shit, you know, like it happening, and then wanting to share it.
Right.
I rarely see a misleading intention in the manifestation more than it's missing it. It's missing the mark and emphasizing the generator of suffering.
Posers catering to posers in exchange for cash.
I mean, you're describing an effect. From the dream.
It's raining posers.
So where you don't see them causing more suffering.
Well,
same
see,
thing.
Well, that's what's interesting.
It's an effect.
They're not causing more suffering. The dream that perpetuates the separation and distinction of awake, of enlightened, of you already all are enlightened.
Pema Chodron is the devotee of a Tibetan alcoholic that started a navy in Vermont. What more do we need to know about this woman? It's done.
So, okay, you just shot the messenger.
The guy started a navy in Boulder. There's no fucking ocean anywhere near Boulder. They marched in regalia. And she's the devotee of this clown, this alcoholic, misogynist, sexist, chauvinistic, abusive clown, wow, who everyone thought was the shit, and they called it crazy wisdom instead of clown, run. Instead of calling it clown, run, they called it crazy wisdom to justify the whole thing. And this lovely Pema Chodron is the devotee of this fucking clown. and I want to read her books. I'd rather join the goddamn Navy. Oh, fucking posers, catering to posers in exchange for cash. And I'm being polite here.
Okay.
You know, come on.
I rest.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I give the rest of my time to the center, to the present.
I want to sleep with you. 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 Somebody bring me some more alcohol. Let's start a navy.
Why did he start a navy?
He was nuts. He was a psychopath.
People loved him.
Well, of course. Psychopaths can be very charming. Especially if they're an admiral.
Before, but now that I know that the psychopath thing, I'm more interested. Yeah.
Especially
just go straight to his stuff.
Everyone loves an admiral.
So it doesn't float.
Straight to the Navy.
Doesn't float in Boulder.
Doesn't float, right, exactly.
But what if they're, you know, again, the dream doesn't know, and it's incredibly sincere and by all observances, crazy.
Sincere about what?
Right, right. But see, the thing is, how can you, when you're just...
You'd have to have, like, a goal. I mean, what are you sincere about?
No, like, say if you're delusional and you have a dream that you consider to be absolute clarity, you know, and every, you know, and there's a good percentage of people that see the delusion.
That's samsara.
You know, yet then a whole group of people see the clarity in the delusion and are like fully with you. What harm is done?
We're not talking about harm. It's right. Not even, who cares about harm?
Right. But
or even benefit.
Then, you know, then the vitriol, is that the word?
Call it that. I call it the thrill of the rant.
Okay, there we go. Have fun.
Yeah, that's all. That's all it is. You want to believe in Pema Chodron? Fantastic.
Oh, no, I'm not really.
I'm not saying you. I mean, believe in everything and anything.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's not that difficult to shred everything in sight, starting with oneself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're only become a good shredder of others. When
you shred yourself,
when you've done a nice, fairly good job of shredding yourself,
right,
then you can see the hilarity and the ridiculousness and the absurdity of anything absurd about anything.
Right, because you're not knocking children off of the podium where you're then standing. You're just knocking him and anyone else off of a...
No, I'm just interested in a good mud wrestle.
Yeah. off of the idea that a self can be improved.
That's right.
But I like that. Himself easily.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
That's identification with the weight.
That's a great idea.
And it's ownership. And it's perpetual chasing of something.
That's right.
Over and over.
That's
and over
what
again.
We're playing with.
New robes, new face.
Yes.
New words.
Yes.
Yet nothing is new.
Right.
The self is excited because it's fresh, like new love. And then you get kind of sick and tired of certain things and want to move on over and over again. Get sick and tired of yourself and stick something around your neck. Not that I'd ever want to do that. But. And then sometimes you just go, oh, wow.
You rest in your own irrefutability. There's no sometimes.
Yeah, I got the flashcards. Sometimes.
You must be the reincarnation of the recently deceased Don Pardo.
That's right.
Tell me more. It sounds familiar.
The announcer on SNL.